up there, rock and rollers. Welcome to the episode number 116 of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast, brought to you by me, your host, Mac B. the Wolf. And I'll be joined, as usual, by my partner in crime, Gary Action Jackson from the East Coast of America. And we're going to welcome our first guest of 2023, actually a repeat guest from 2021. If you all remember our 50th episode, technically our 50th episode, the second part of our 50th episode. Some people will call that a 51st episode. Not us. It's 50 part two, where we dedicated time to the classic movie Highlander and the Killer Queen soundtrack that went along with it. And our guest on episode 50 part two was Ryan Connell. Ryan was the executive producer and co-creator and head writer on House of the Dragon, the big Game of Thrones sequel, which has really taken the world by storm. It's a huge, huge hit right now. We had him on because he had done a script for a rebooted Highlander that I guess never saw the light of day. So we talked about that a little bit. We also went over some of the stuff in the movie about collecting hero props for movies, because he's got an incredible podcast of his own called The Stuff That Dreams Are Made Of that he does with his buddy David. And it's killer, and they have great guests. He's had George R.R. Martin on there, as you might expect. So we were lucky enough to have him come back. I asked him, well, what album would you like to do if you come back and do a whole album with us? He said, you know, I love House of the Holy by Led Zeppelin. It's got a connection to my wedding, and I'd be happy to do that. So like, great. When the show's over, when it's debuted, and you're getting ready on season two, come on back. So that's what we did this week. We're going to go over track by track, as we always do, Houses of the Holy, as it turns 50. Can you imagine that Houses of the Holy is turning 50 as we're recording this very shortly? So we're going to have Ryan share his memories with me and Jackson, how he came to the music, why it's important to him, sonically what it meant for Led Zeppelin. First, we got to do a little bit of business here. As usual, we like to proudly say that we are members of the Pantheon Podcast Network of about 100 different shows, all different sorts of music. There's really something in there for everybody. You can follow them at Pantheon Pods. Go to www.pantheonpodcast.com. We have friends that we've had on our shows, have been on their shows, like Tom and Zeus from the Shout It Out Loud cast, Jay from The Hook Rocks, Christy Alexander Hallberg from Rock Is Lit, Martin Popoff from History and Five Songs, Paul Stevenson of This Day Rocks and Vintage Rock Pod, and of course the CEO, Christian Swain of Rock and Roll Archaeology. And we have to thank our incredible sponsors. Look, I know there's some record collectors out there. There's all sorts of cool Led Zeppelin stuff to collect out there. Our sponsor, RareVinyl.com, has a really killer stash of excellent Led Zeppelin stuff. I'm talking LPs, singles, CDs, rare, hard-to-find items. They curate them, they take care of them in the shop in England, and they ship all around the world. So if you go to rarevinyl.com and use the code PODCAST, you can save 10% off your order, which makes it worthwhile because you can pick up some killer stuff. It's obviously not just Led Zeppelin. They have 250,000 things in stock. So go to rarevinyl.com or EIL.com, use the code PODCAST, save yourself 10% on your Led Zeppelin collector's items or whatever you may be looking for. Now back to Houses of the Holy. Yeah, this is the first one not named after the band, right? It just had Led Zeppelin, 1, 2, 3, and then the four runestones for the fourth album. So this is the first album they actually named, but they still didn't put the name on the cover. Very Led Zeppelin, the power that Peter Grant and the band wielded through Atlantic Records to make their everything unique. Their sound, their album covers, their packaging, the visual arts, everything was special about Led Zeppelin. This is the one that came out in early 1973, their fifth album. And the boys had grown a little bit in the first 4 years or so that they were on tour together. They had saved a little bit of money and were able to create some studios in their homes, which allowed them to craft songs and come in with more fully formed ideas instead of maybe just some chord sequences. So some of these come in more polished and ready to go, which gives them the opportunity to be even more collaborative because now there's more structure. John Paul Jones really shines on this one. He really came into his own here. He wrote or co-wrote half the songs on there, including the amazing No Quarter, which to me is epic and moody and thick and just special in the Led Zeppelin catalog. It's one I never want to skip over, and live they can really stretch it out and do some cool trippy things with it. I just always love that one. So this is really a coming out party for JPJ. Obviously, all the other guys are fantastic as usual on it. So let's go ahead. This is going to be a little bit long. Let's go ahead and jump in. We are visiting with Ryan Condal of House of the Dragon, going over Led Zeppelin's Houses of the Holy on its 50th anniversary, right here on The Wolf. Yeah, so picking up HBO Max, Jackson, not only did I get to finally see House of the Dragon, of which our guest is the executive producer and creator, and I guess he's technically the co-creator with George R.R. Martin, but, you know, head writer and all that kind of fun stuff. Also, I finally got to see his partner, like kind of like you and I are partners in a podcast. Well, he's got a great podcast called The Stuff Dreams Are Made Of that he does with his friend David, who is also a great writer and producer of shows, including Seinfeld. And there might be a little bit of money in that. And then Veep. He did Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, which is a great show, which I always kind of wanted to get into. And for whatever reason, it's just like, all right, well, I'll get there one day. Right? You can't watch everything, especially as it's being made. It's like, okay, well, HBO does great stuff. Eventually, I'll get into it. So I ripped through those, man. That was fun. That was good TV. I like that.
They were talking one time back and forth about the things from the show, like props and everything, and about how, I mean, on Veep, what do you have? Maybe you've got a nameplate from one of the characters, you know, on their desk that would be cool. Whereas in House of the Dragon, literally everything is cool. You could take anything from any character and it would just be awesome.
Any of their swords, any of their wardrobe or armor, correct, any of those props, correct, man.
Like in the first episode where he gives her the necklace. And even that, I'm like, anything would be cool from that show.
I know. It's so cool. And so, I mean, I think we talked to him about that the first time we had him on. It's like, because he obviously has collected some really cool stuff from over the years. And big movies, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Conan, stuff like that. And I'm like, so have you got, are you working with your armor? Like, okay, everything that's screen used, all the hero stuff. Yeah, just go ahead and stick that in my trailer.
Yeah, we need to make sure that, yes, that's put in a special spot, my trailer. That way I can have that. I mean, they get into some real heavy-duty discussions about, like I think Ryan was talking about, he's got some of the armor from Alien, or Aliens, I'm sorry, Michael Biehn's armor from, and from he's Aliens. Like, he had the far away stuff, like the action stuff, but then he sold that and he bought like the close up, like more of the hero stuff.
Gotcha.
And then he was saying, well, I'm kind of upset about that, because what I'd really like to have is a display with both of them so you could see the differences. I'm like, oh my goodness, that's a rabbit hole you could go down forever.
For sure, yeah. No, and he had one of Conan's swords from the Conan movies, a hero sword, one was used. And, you know, I think I even tweeted about like, hey, he's got a Conan sword. Some, you know, internet idiot came up like, he showed a video of Arnold like, this is Conan's sword, you know. And I was just looking at him like, well, A, you know, Arnold's not showing you a certificate of authenticity there. B, that sword looked pristine, like it hadn't been used. And if you use it in the movie, it's going to get chips and nicks and stuff on that. It's going to be used, you know. And so a hero sword is not going to be pristine.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
we've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of Scary Guys, Skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month. So just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
But I'm like, I didn't really want to go down a rabbit hole with some internet. It's not it. Your guy's lying. I'm like, yeah. Right. The Hollywood producer's lying about the stuff that he has. You're right, Mr. Out in the middle of nowhere. We're trying to fool you. That's why you voted for Trump twice. But anyway.
Well, I know that was a big thing. It's like at one point in time, you wanted pristine, right? You wanted it to be perfect. But then it's like, no, I really want one. Yeah, like you said, it's got nicks and dirt on it that you can see. No,
it's authentic.
Actually on
it's
the
used.
Set. Correct.
Yeah. Correct. You don't want a Mickey Mantle bat that's matched. Like right off the press. You want one he got a hit with, right? You know, yeah. And that's going to have nicks and dings on it. So, yeah. So, I mean, the first time we spoke with him, House of the Dragon hadn't come out yet. It was still in production. And now it's a global sensation, as we knew it would be, on the back of Game of Thrones, which was so well done and so popular with folks. But now that he's actually hit the big time with it, I'm just glad he still wants to talk about rock and roll with us, you know?
Well, I think that's the cool part is that, you know, he has made it big. He's got a big hit show, but still the passion for stuff like that burns in him. Yeah. And so that is pretty cool. It will never go away.
There he is.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. You sound good.
Yes.
Good. Cool. How are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. It's sunny in London, even. Not just Amsterdam. And
by the way, it rains more here than it ever did in London, but I swear to God, ever since we moved in, it has rained like almost every day. So
I was there for a few days, it's like 3 or 4 days or something in the summer and in August, and it was gorgeous. It was glorious there. It was
awesome.
Actually hot. Yeah. But beautiful city. Really great. Amsterdam.
Well, look at you, man. You got your Led Zeppelin t-shirt on, man. You're all
ready
to go. Yeah. All right. Well, look, hey, and congratulations on the success of the show. I finally got to watch them all. I got HBO for Christmas, and I just got to watch them all. Really amazingly well done, well written. And I know that you may have used some blue screens and stuff, but I mean, the sets and the cinematography and stuff was really, really cool stuff, Ryan. It's really well done.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we tried to do as much in camera as we could, but of course, you know, fantasy world like that, you do have to create some things digitally. But yes, we're intensely proud of it and hard at work on season two, which we'll start filming in a few months. And on we go.
Excellent. Well, and I'll tell you, I was just telling Jackson, another great part about getting HBO Max was I got to get your co-host, your partner in crime on the stuff dreams are made of. I get to see David's great show Veep in its entirety. It's just one of those shows that for whatever reason I just didn't watch it while it was coming out. You know, I'll be like, I'll get there, I'll see it one day. Right.
Good. Tell David. We'll appreciate that. And he's got his next one is coming too in March or May, I forget which slot he got, but White House Plumbers. It's like a sort of Cohen-esque take on the Watergate break-in, but through the POV of the burglars, and the trailer's out. It looks hilarious, as would be expected.
I'm sure. I'm
so excited for that one as well. Just plugging all sorts of stuff as well as our. Please listen to our podcast, The Stuff Dreams Are Made Of, about movie.
Talk about that a little bit before you got on.
Yeah,
no, you've got a cool collection and inspiring people, you know, to appreciate these little bits of movie history, really, right? I mean, that,
cinema history.
Yeah, I mean, someone has to preserve that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's what our whole life is. It's what your podcast is about, right? It's about nostalgia and preserving history and trying to relive our glory days a bit.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. No, and as long as, you know, these guys are still alive, I want to get them on the show. I want to talk to them. I want to talk about their records that are having 40th and 50th anniversaries. Can you imagine that Houses of the Holy turns 50 in just short order here and not too long from now? That means I must be turning 50 soon. That's nuts.
No, it's insane. It's insane. It was it was released a day after my dad turned 21. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. But we I know you don't have a ton of time, and so we want to hit track by track. But what we like to do is to kind of learn a little bit about how you came to know this record. And maybe you could give a little background about how you came into Led Zeppelin, but it was like, how old were you when you found this? What effect did it have on you? And maybe talk about some of big moments you may have enjoyed while listening to these 8 songs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I came to Zeppelin, I think, in college. So I guess a bit late, but I didn't, you know, my music taste was so defined by my social group. And, you know, I grew up in the, you know, I went middle school for me was 1991. So that, you know, glorious run of 10 and Nirvana's first album,
right,
and the Black Album, Metallica, that, you know, there's a meme on the internet of like, the stack of cassette tapes, the insane stack of cassette tapes that was all released in the same like month in 1991 that are right. All classics. And, you know, basically, you know, see, you know, good luck to you every year after 1991. So my music taste was really defined around that. And of course, a kid, you know, at that age, you're interested in listening to, you know, the music of your generation, not necessarily going back. But I became a big kind of metalhead sort of through high school and into college. And I was always into the harder stuff. So, you know, Metallica and I was a big into Rage Against the Machine and this stuff from that era. I was a huge Tool fan. And also all the kind of, you know, grunge alt stuff, but on the harder side, Alice in Chains.
Alice in Chains. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All that kind of stuff. I now have a very diverse, music taste. But back then it was a lot of that and, you know, remains the Deftones, et cetera, et cetera. So, in college, I met actually a guy who is this like Led Zeppelin obsessive, and he was a really good, talented bass player. And he always used to talk about John Paul Jones and his bass playing. And I never heard anybody talk about bass playing as a individual art within a band. And I mean, of course I knew Led Zeppelin by reputation. I knew a bunch of their songs, but I always thought of Page and Plant and Bonham. Sure. You know, I didn't think of, you know, John Paul Jones, and he always talked about him a lot. So actually I started listening out of a sort of interest in that. And I was very interested in history and all, you know, all the things, the eras that came before, as you can see surrounding me here. It's always been a fascination of mine. So, I started listening and I got really into it. And he, you know, he smartly said, you know, these guys are everybody says the Beatles are the forefathers of rock, but he's like, the rock that you listen to,
right,
these are the forefathers of that rock. You know, it's, you know, Metallica does maybe exist with, you know, without the Beatles, but definitely does not exist without Zeppelin, you know, that true sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really into it. And of course went for all the Led Zeppelin named albums first, and the hardest, heaviest stuff first, you know, Immigrant Song and a Whole Lot of Love and, you know, Stairway. Not that that's hard, but the, you know, the famous one, I always remember Wayne's World, you know, the,
sure. No stairway.
Denied. And and I got very into it and was just started really appreciating the musicianship at play there. And this was right around that time that, I don't know if you remember it, but it was one of their many box sets, but the stack of CDs that slotted into that sort of garage door, the one that they had,
okay,
and it was like, it was all of their studio albums, I think, including Coda, just slotted into this little thing with a cardboard cover that came. So that was the first thing that I bought, and it was like $100, and it was,
oh,
like,
wow. Yeah.
You know, huge deal. And I just, you know, I just listened to them. So I don't think that I came to any individual album in any different way. I really came to Led Zeppelin as an oeuvre.
Okay.
And certainly I had different experiences. There were albums I played more than others at the beginning. I'm an unapologetic Led Zeppelin 3 fan. I really think that that is their first great album. I think they're a great band right out of the gate, but I think that one really, the musicianship and the,
it's a game changer. Yeah, that's not just blues based rock. Yeah, absolutely.
Correct. And the write and the songwriting and all that is really great. And then I've always loved Houses of the Holy. I find that to be one of the, and I actually listened to it a bunch this week, knowing that I was sitting with you guys and not wanting to be talking out of my ass any more than I normally do. But I remembered why I often go to that one, because it's one of it's one of theirs that I find is really listenable from beginning to end. You can kind of put it on and experience the album, you know, as I imagine you would have done back in the day with a vinyl record, and put it on and just sat and listened to it as almost like a movie, you know, watching the experience and going through the chapters of it. And look, not that their other albums aren't like that, but this one is particularly, to me, feels like that. It has an opener, it has a great, you know, great closing, and it has these kind of rhythms and moves that it goes through. And I've always really, really loved that album. And I think I mentioned to you, Mac, when we were talking about it, we in the debate over wedding songs and things like that.
Right.
It was not our song technically, but it was the song that began our wedding reception, was Over the Hills and Far Away. Because I just love that. One of the greatest transitions of all time, you know, to go from a kind of plucky ballad into a true rocker, Led Zeppelin rocker. And
that's right.
And I love the lyrics of it. And there's actually a British military hymn called the same thing that I found the lyrics to.
And
it seems like they're pulling something from there. It's called Over the Hills and Far Away. It's like a marching hymn. So anyway, that's sort of my history with it. I love the album. I was reading up on it too, and again in prep for this, and it was referred to as the last great Led Zeppelin record, which I don't know that I mean Physical Graffiti is pretty terrific, but yeah. But you know, a great, I mean, obviously that's written with love, at least for House of the Holy. So I love the album, and it's a Desert Island disc, I would say.
Awesome killer. All right, well, before we get track by track, Jackson, how about you? How did you get to Houses?
Well, I was a couple of years older, still am, than Ryan. So mine was more in high school, like in the late 80s. So before all of the music that you were talking about came out. So I was kind of in that in-between part. I knew Led Zeppelin. I had heard a lot of it, but not all of it. And I'm like, okay, I need to buy one of their albums so that I can be cool and say that I have a Led Zeppelin record. And 2 and 3 were kind of, I didn't really know them that well. And this was, and 4 everybody had. So that was easy to get to. This one was like, I know some of the songs, so I think if I pull the trigger, I'll be okay. Bought it, listened to everything. I had it on CD. I put it on a tape. And I used to remember, I get in the car and just listen to it. I just drive, just go somewhere, just get out of the house, just chill. So I've listened to this 1,000 times forward and backwards in its entirety. So like you're saying, Ryan, it is like a movie. You know, you have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah, no, that's cool. No, I mean, like Jackson was saying, yeah, we're a few years old to you. That time, 1991, when you were in middle school, that's when we met as freshmen in college, me and Jackson. And it was an interesting time for music, because it's like, yes, here comes Pearl Jam, here comes Nirvana, here comes Soundgarden and Alice in Chains. But that exact same time, you know, here's U2's Octung Baby, here's Def Leppard back after 5 years away, you know, here's Dire Straits back after 5 or 6 years away,
yeah.
you know, here's Metallica's coming up with this huge black, you know, so it's, you know, there was some old school and new school going on at the time, and we were pretty old school. Our tastes always were a little bit older than we were anyway. Like in the late 80s, I would say my favorite bands were like Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, and Rush. Like, not late 70s, this is late 80s. That's what I liked, you know. And my dad was into rock and roll. I mean, like, he taught me about Chuck Berry when I was like 4 years old, you know. And he liked The Doors, and he liked Cream and that kind of stuff. He also didn't like the Beatles much. He didn't like the Rolling Stones. He didn't like Led Zeppelin. So I had to go out and find that. And I think I came to Houses because I had 2 and 4. And I obviously knew that there was a 1 and 3, because if there's a 2 and 4, there must be a 1 and 3. So it's like, all right, well, let me see what else there is. Physical Graffiti, okay, that's a double album. I don't know if I can afford that one. But what's this one? What's the orange one with the naked kids on the rocks? That's kind of weird. You know, another Hypnosis title, cover. It's like, all right, well, I'll check that out. And yeah, like you, it was like Over the Hills and Far Away. I'm like, this is an amazing song with like the acoustic bit. And of course, I didn't really know about tracking. You know, it's like you can just lay down on one track an acoustic guitar and another track come in with the electric. So I just had visions of him playing an acoustic guitar on stage for that bit and then like throwing it to a roadie. And then he's got his Les Paul underneath go, I didn't realize that, you know, you could just do that magic in the studio, or maybe you had a pedal that you could be playing on your double neck Gibson. Right. Just press the pedal and then you're in the next stratosphere. But
they would play it live. They played it live though, and they had to do that, you know, they had to do that live. I mean, kind of amazing, you know.
ahead of their time, I would say. I mean, not everybody was doing that. That's for sure.
Hi, I'm Deborah Bonham.
And I am the Irish werewolf in England, Peter Bullock.
And you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London.
But all right, I know you don't have a ton of time, so let's go track by track. We start off with the always favorite song Remains the Same, another song that he used that beautiful double neck Gibson on, and yeah. I guess one that they really love to play live. Yeah, does this always catch you? You always say, "Wow, this is an amazing way to open this album."
Yeah, I mean, I can hear, you know, obviously I can hear that opening riff very clearly. It's just another great Led Zeppelin opener. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Man, they really that's a run of five killer openers if you really just go down the list of thinking about those. Good times, bad times. And so what's the opener on two? Three is Immigrant Song. Four is Black Dog. What's the opener on two? It's Leaving Me. It's Not a Whole Lot of Love.
It's not Heartbreaker either.
No.
I can get there in about 2 seconds here.
Good trivia question. Yeah, A Whole Lot of Love sort of eats that album up. So you just, and probably everybody just skipping to that one. But yeah, it's such a terrific song, and it's the name of the the famous sort of...
It is Whole Lot of Love.
It is Whole Lot of Love.
It is Whole Lot of Love, yeah.
Why is that thinking? Okay. There you go. Well, there you go.
Makes sense, though.
So it continues the tradition of great Zeppelin record openers, but it's also the song Remains the Same as the name of the Boondoggle documentary film?
Slash fantasy sequence.
Yeah. Making their own like backsheety Lord of the Rings kind of thing, whatever that was.
Again, in high school, I loved that shit, man. Yeah, I thought it was great. It's like not only cool to see him in the Madison Square Garden, but it's like the dream sequences or whatever. Yeah. This is trippy, man.
Yeah. And that's, if you had to make like a Mount Rushmore of all time shows to be at, 1985 Live Aid with Queen and the Beatles on the roof of the
Apple building. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that Madison Square Garden show has to be one. This is one of the just legendary, cause at that period they were so kind of, smacked out on all of their various substances. You either got like a legendary Led Zeppelin show or like they couldn't, figure out how to put the night together. And I think that was one of the legendary ones. And anyway, great opener.
Yeah, what do you think, Jackson?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's what you want to start a record off. When you look at everything on here, you want to get them going, you want to get them hooked in, and this is the way to go. It looks like this was supposed to be or started off life as an instrumental, which it definitely sounds like the vocals will kind of put in, maybe we don't want to be an instrumental. Let's put some vocals in. The melody is really running the show on this one and not the vocals. So, yeah, great way to start the disc off.
Yeah. Jimmy's a little frantic at the beginning, really kind of throughout, but it's still cool. I guess he and John Paul Jones had both taken some of their winnings from the previous tours and albums and built home studios, which allowed them to develop some of these songs before they came in, because usually they would come in and do it all together. But now they can come in with some more fully formed concepts. What I didn't, because he composed it as The Overture when he brought it to the boys. And then...
Right.
Plant kind of changed the lyrics. He added lyrics in it and talk about life on the road. So then it kind of became The Campaign was the working title until they decided on The Song Remains the Same. What I didn't realize, but I can hear it now, they sped up Robert's voice in the song. He sung it at one speed. They pulled it up to make it a little higher, a little faster. So although they love to play this live, I wonder if it was difficult for Robert to pull off because he had to get to that higher register to match, right?
Wow.
Yeah, it's probably easier to put it in the beginning when you can still sing that high and not at the end when you've been out there for an hour and change. Yeah, exactly. I like the part too where it comes in frantic, but then in the middle it slows way down, so you kind of groove to that a little bit, and then bam, right back into it again.
It's got that melodic run by Jimmy in it too. It's really nice stuff. Mm. I have to admit that when I was younger, especially when I would watch the movie Song Remains the Same, it'd be kind of a bummer to me, just because I'm like, Jimmy's got the double neck. Is he going to play Stairway? Oh, no, it's this Song Remains the Same song, right? And I was like, you can't just use that for Stairway, young Mac. He can use it for other things. But you're right. Great way, killer way to start off the record. And they loved it. They almost never didn't play that song the rest of the time that they performed.
Yeah, I believe they played it at Celebration today, which was their last, their last live show. I believe that's on that. Yeah, that's on that. And that's another one, because that's when I was actually alive for.
Exactly.
Would have been, man. I know an actor who's in my first pilot, who's a big metalhead, paid $10,000 to go to that show. And he's like, and I wasn't like front row. I was just there.
Just in the building. No, I understand Dave Grohl is there. Dave Grohl can do whatever he wants, But it's like 30 million requests for something like 20,000 tickets or something like that, So.
Yeah.
You said he paid $10,000, but he said he can say he was there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no regrets. Yeah.
No doubt about it. All right. Now, we always talk about on the show how like the first song's usually got to come out and grab you, get you going. The second one usually takes it up a notch, and the third one's a gear shift back. Mm-hmm. But on this one, the second one is the big gear shift back with Rain Song, very long song, 7.5-8 minutes, and one that, if you just ask me without me looking, I often can't place which album Rain Song is on. And I might just guess, oh, was that on 3? Because they had some softer songs on 3. Was that on Physical Graffiti? Because I can't remember all of side 3 and 4 of Physical Graffiti. But I just forgot what a beautiful song this was until I really listened to the record again.
This is a George Harrison song.
That's right.
Which I didn't know, but he was like a huge Zeppelin fan. And just loved what they were doing and like gifted this to them, I guess. And I mean, it's unclear as to what exactly he did. Did he write, riff or whatever? But I love that kind of DNA in there. And I love that one of the Beatles was also a fan of, let's face it, the greatest rock band of all time.
Ooh, big statement from Mr. Connell.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
greatest Harrison hard rock band of all time, I would say.
There you go.
Yeah.
Harrison was at Jones's birthday party, and they were talking about this, you guys, you're great, but you should write a slow song, blah, blah, blah. And I think at some point in time in that party, Bonham ended up throwing Harrison into the pool. And if that's not one of the cool, like, could you imagine, like, this is all going on at one thing. That's fantastic. And to your point, it is really cool that Harrison would be not just a fan of the band. Like, he understood music, he understood where it was going, he really liked them and what they were doing.
Yeah, and I think the comment was, he went to Jimmy's like, I like Led Zeppelin, but they don't play any ballads. So maybe he showed something to Jimmy, maybe Jimmy just borrowed. I mean, look, the beginning chords are basically, it's the same as Something. Basically, the same chords as Something, the famous George Harrison Beatles track. So he reworked it, but a lot of great acoustic in here. I think that JPJ wrote the string section and played it through a Mellotron, which is kind of cool. Something that he could do.
Was this album the first appearance of the synth stuff for Zeppelin? I was trying to think back because I'm sure it shows up before, but this is the first one where I think it's really present, where you can tell that it's not just guitar based drums. It's starting to move in that kind of synth. It goes very like with Castellambra and stuff.
A little
like
more
that.
Proggy, yeah. That's proggy. Absolutely. Because the first two were basically straight blues and rock albums for the most part.
Right.
The third one, they branch out and do some acoustic stuff and arrange
acoustic,
more stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, Zeppelin IV actually, has the acoustic stuff and the hard rock stuff, but he's also got, some more mellow stuff on there. But this, I think this is a real turning point for the band. It's like, let's do some different things. And we're going to see that in the songs to come.
Yeah.
Well, and I think too, that the fact that Jones now had his own studio like Jimmy Page in his house, and it's like, ooh, I've got the studio, I've got toys, let's play with these. And I think for him to come into the recording sessions with stuff that he'd already done, you were talking, Ryan, before about the bass and, how it kind of gets pushed to the side. And we've talked about this before. John Paul Jones is probably one of, if not the greatest utility infielders ever, just filling in his stuff, grooving underneath, and just, yeah, he adds a lot to this record. Not that he doesn't on the other ones, but yeah, I think he's kind of coming into his own here, doing different stuff.
I mean, he was sort of like band's producer musician. He was musician slash producer because he was, you know, of all the madness and the drinking quarts of vodka and racing motorcycles up the stairs, you don't really hear about him in those stories. And I feel like he kind of kept it together. And I feel like a lot of the reason that band survived, not like physically survived, but meaning, you know, kept it together enough to make more albums, was because he was there kind of gluing it all together and keeping it flowing and composing the, it wasn't just the guitar riff or the lyrics. He was composing the orchestra, or, you know, conducting the orchestra, so to speak.
No, true. You know, and Page and Plant get co-writes on all of these songs, but Jonesy has co-writes on half of these songs. And like Gary said, utility infrared. You need bass? Great, I play the bass. You need a mandolin? Yeah, that's fine, I'll play the mandolin. You need an organ? You need a piano? You know, what do you need? You know, you need strings? Yeah. Okay, I can put that together. And you're right. He's, I mean, compared to the other ones, I mean, he's been married to the same woman for, what, 55, 56 years, something crazy. Like, at least crazy in the annals of rock and roll. So
yeah.
He was the steady one, while Jimmy was kind of the, you know, woo, he was out there, but talented as they can be, right? It is the summer of my smile. I made a funny note here. In listening to it, in some of the interludes, it sounds like, and I mean this in a good way, it sounds like something in the background of like a 70s James Bond film. Like after an action scene, like they get away from the bad guys and then they float down the river. Just James and some spy he's trying to woo, right? You know? And like this could be on the background when James is like, well, darling, since we have some time to kill. I mean, it just, I don't know. That just came to me. I didn't know if you guys would relate to that or not, but it's beautiful.
I'll have to go back and listen to it now.
Yeah, it has majesty to it. It's a bit of a jam at the end.
Yeah, like I said, it's like the experience of listening to this movie is listening to this album is like watching a movie. It has its kind of story rhythms to it. You know, it's the opening action sequence with Song Remains the Same. And then this is the floating down the river. I didn't think it was a James Bond song, but I could see it as a, these guys would have been a great, I would have loved to see the movie scored by the musicians of Led Zeppelin. You know how like with Trent Reznor and Atticus Finch has become, not Atticus Finch, what is his name? That's the guy from Kill Mockingbird.
Right.
God, it's left me. But a lot of musicians have moved on to scoring movies.
Trevor Rabin of Yes has scored like 50 movies or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Danny Elfman of Oingo Boingo is one of the biggest scorers in the world, right?
Yeah. Well, he's so famous as a composer that I think people forget that he was
Oingo Boingo.
He was a rocker first. Yeah.
Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo has done some great scores over the years. You know, Robbie Robertson of the band has done some scores, and Jimmy Page maybe did Death Wish 2, and John Paul Jones maybe did Death Wish 3, but I don't know if everybody loves this. I'll tell you one more thing about the Rain Song. Robert Plant doesn't really like to compete with his former self, and when he goes out with Alison Krauss or with his Band of Joy, he might do one or two Zeppelin songs, and maybe they're reworked a little bit. This is one I'd like to see him do now that he's more of a crooner, and he's not trying to scream out those stuff. I would like to see him do this with Alison. Now, you know, and he's going to be in Louisville the week of the Derby, so maybe I'll go check him out.
You could rework this and have it have more of a country feel to it and still be the same song. That would be interesting.
We'll see. I'll send him a letter. We'll see if he gets it.
You talk weekly, so sure.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
But the third song, here we go, Ryan, Over the Hills and Far Away. This was easily in high school, easily my favorite song off of this record. And maybe at the time, at least for a brief period, my favorite Led Zeppelin song.
Yeah, I went through that. I think I went through that as well. I think my favorite Zeppelin song now is Achilles' Last Stand. I just feel like that's such like the height of the art, and it's doing everything, you know, that's so great about it. It's like, you know, 9 minutes long. It's just wonderful. But I think this one, I love the musicianship. I love the song, the songwriting, the lyrics of it are beautiful. the emotional feeling that I think it puts you through. And now it has this, like, you know, this nostalgic chord that it hits. Cause I just think of, you know, I think of our wedding, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, we still, you know, 11 years later, we still like each other. And it's just, wonderful. it was such a great day. And I love the song.
That's awesome. I just love the dichotomy of it's this cool acoustic, it's nylon thing. And then, yeah. You know, burr, comes in with the big riff. It's just cool. I actually quoted this on my senior page of my yearbook. Mellow is the man who knows what he's been missing. Many, many men can't see the open road. Now, I couldn't see the open road back then. I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. I just thought it was cool. It's like, I'm going to miss out on some things, but it's okay. I got a long-term plan. Still a great quote.
Yeah, to me, this would be a great end of a movie, you know, after the lead character, you know, bearing the wounds of the final confrontation and deciding to, you know, walk again into the, you know, Kwai Cheng Kane going back into the sunset onto the next Western town to solve the next problem.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, a little kung fu action for you. Yeah. Jackson, anything on Over the Hills before we get to crunch?
Just, I mean, everything that everybody else said, but I really like to listen to this to see how it builds. You know, you've got the one guitar, then you've got two guitars, and I would sit there and listen to it and just say, well, how did you do that? I'm trying to pick out the different parts, and I know that you couldn't do it all live, but yeah, the part where he goes from the acoustic to the electric, yeah, you see him, you know, I'm picturing it up on some kind of stand, and then you take one step back. You reach down because the Les Paul's down by, you know, by your knees. You crank the volume and then bam, you go into it. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
So much, so much, so much.
And if you're halfway decent and you've got the time, you can sit there and pick out the beginning of it on an acoustic guitar. And if you could even play that beginning, the beginning part of the notes, beginning phrase, you think you're, you know, pretty cool in high school. Yeah.
That's right. Did you ever play guitar or dabble with it at all, Ryan?
No, I have no musical ability at all. My brother's very good.
Is that right?
My brother's really, really good. And I think would have, I don't know that songwriting would have been, that was in his wheelhouse, but definitely like if he had stuck with it and really, and he plays, you know, for fun and casually is like a distraction. But I think if he had really committed himself, I mean, I think he could have been a hell of a guitar player.
That's cool. That's cool. And I want to congratulate you on putting, you know, some actors in your show that have some musical history. First of all, Patty Considine is a fine musician, you know.
He's a rock star.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and he was on the Rock on Tours with Guy Pratt and Gary Kemp, who we've had on our show.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they're part of Nick Mason's Saucer Full of Secrets, and he was on there, and he was talking about being on your show, but he's also talking about his music, which I thought was cool.
Riding the Low.
Yes. Yeah, and then Reese... Yeah. Reese was in the video, the Great Oasis, The Importance of Being Idle video. Now, he's an amazing actor. He's been in all sorts of films. I'm sure Notting Hill's where a lot of people remember him from, at least at first. Fine actor. But I remember him from that video because, that just kind of seems his personality to me. I don't know.
I remember him from, and every time I see him, it's always, I thought you said he was all muscle. A Mueri, and he just walks off as the kicker from what was that, The Replacements?
Yeah, that was not a good movie, by the way.
It was not a good movie, but he was awesome in it.
I'm like, they wasted Gene Hackman on this? You've got to be kidding me.
Reese is hilarious.
Yeah, I bet he is. Please tell him we are fans.
He started his career at the very beginning of his career. He did stand up in Welsh.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he was a Welsh stand-up. And I was like, that's a very, that feels like a very niche kind of, kind of thing. But apparently it was hilarious, and he's bilingually hilarious. But actually, and also, you know, talking about rock DNA in our show, Millie Alcock, young Rhaenyra, is in the new Noel Gallagher video. She's the star.
Is she?
That's
killer, man. I see where Noel is going to do some shows around the UK this summer. Tickets are already going on sale. So, that is awesome. Well, I have to check that out because I didn't know that. Good for her. That's awesome. All right, look, we got to stay on point, guys. I know we're running out of time here. Number four, last song on the first side, because we Although I never had this on cassette, I went straight to CD on this one. But that is how people used to listen to them, either on LP or on cassette.
Yep.
You would listen to it and flip it. And the last song on the first song.
Those are those black CDs, right?
The black CDs that for some reason cost five times as much, but you can't take them in the car. Yeah, that's what
they
are.
Yeah,
did you? All right. So tell me, I'm going to go last on the crunch. Tell me what you guys think about the crunch.
I think this is the skippable one from this album. I really do like the whole album. I was listening this week. I played it all the way through, but this just feels like them just like messing around. And I just, I don't know. Because it's such a great, I mean, with those three back-to-back killers, and it just feels like, okay, you guys. I don't think it's filler, because it's not that. It's a tight album. I just think they're like having a laugh. And I actually think if you read the interviews, they sort of were. And with this, right. And then with Do Your Maker, anyway, but yes, I don't know. I don't have much to say about the crunch. it also feels like new toys in the studio, kind of let's mess around with the new stuff. And you know,
yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my read on the crunch.
Jackson.
What was that confounded bridge? Yeah. Very, very odd change of pace. When I was first listening to this record, I didn't like it. I have come to like it a lot more. That bass is super funky.
It is.
It's a James Brown, I guess, tribute. So you can kind of see that, you know, yeah. They paying homage to him. What I really liked it's got that weird the electronic stuff going up underneath. And then what I really liked was you heard Robert Plant actually speak at the end. And you're like, you know what? He sounds like a really cool dude in his speaking voice, you know, because he goes all over the place. Like his voice doesn't stay in one register. But to actually hear him speak, and that was before you really could get into like interviews and stuff on YouTube. So it's a nice change of pace for me. It's weird. And it's just them doing whatever they wanted to do at that point.
Yeah. Okay. So honestly, because of the beat, this one was always off-putting to me. Like you can't dance to this. Mm. And that was intentional. Bonham was trying to do kind of an off-kilter thing to it. So it's clever. So I appreciate that they wanted to do something different. I appreciate they were kind of doing some kind of tribute to James Brown. But I'm with Ryan. I rarely listen to this. I'll be honest with you. I hadn't listened to this album all the way through since high school until I started to do research for our show today, you know, because it's just, I would hear this, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the one that doesn't sound right. You know, the bass is funky. Jimmy's playing stuff that I don't love. It's a little high. It's not killer Jimmy stuff, but you know, it
He's
is
definitely
funky.
Not out in front on this one.
Yeah. Look, I give him credit for pushing out. It's like we said, they were very blues and hard rock based. Those first two albums, they went a little more acoustic, but that's, you know, that's okay. So you're bringing in some bluegrass kind of old Celtic, maybe country stuff. But now this is where they're really doing something different. I don't love it, but I give them credit for doing it.
Can I make a pitch?
Pitch.
Traveling back to 1973 as they're tracking the album. Can we just swap this one out and maybe keep this for like a B-sides and rarities collection at some point and put House of the Holy actually on this album?
Put the title track on the
this
album?
Graffiti doesn't need it. That's a big enough. It's a double album. It's big enough.
That's
nobody
right.
would miss it. And that is definitely like, weird. That is the fourth act of this album would be pretty killer.
Yes. It would be amazing.
And it was always weird as a kid to try and figure out why you called the thing Houses of the Holy. Why did you not have Houses of, well, you don't worry about that because we do whatever we want. Okay, fine. Right. Yeah, it is very strange that not only would you not use the tune, but you put it on the next record.
And okay. I know I came to them late, but I always sort of in my head, you know, as you retcon things in your head or do you headcanon, I always in my presumption was always that the Houses of the Holy track on Physical Graffiti was something related to the making of or the touring of this album. It was so seminal in their oeuvre that they wrote a song about, you know, it was almost like a song about the album or a song about the experience of making the album. I never thought that, you know, I know that it's the thing, you know, in rock, you have the, you know, the album, the song that's the title of the album, right. You know, And Justice for All, Master of Puppets, you know, Ride the Lightning. But for me, like, I was just like, oh yeah, okay, cool. That's just a song about the experience. And but I didn't realize until, you know, reading one of the many Zeppelin books that it was meant to be on this album and then was either unfinished and they put it aside and they picked it up again for Physical Graffiti, which is, good story.
Speaking of stories, do we know who says, where's that confounded bridge at the end? In research, nobody knows. Everybody has their theories, but nobody knows exactly who that is.
It's not Plant?
A lot of people think it is.
It's what it always sounded like to me. What are the other options?
That it could have been Bonzo. Option is that it could have been John Paul Jones, and it could have maybe been John Paul Jones, although it doesn't sound much like it from interviews. I mean, it sounds like an accountant, like someone who's around, where is that confounded? Where did I put my pen? Where's that confounded?
But it feels like treated to me. It feels like they slowed it down, maybe, or sped it up. And if they were playing with tape speeds, it could be disguised. I always thought it was Plant because he's just, you know, somebody missed the cue, you know, the lead singer is always the most indignant of the band. That's part of the role.
That's right. But when he said, I can't find the bridge, that's so high. And there's, where is that confounded bridge? That's much lower. So it might be him. You might be right. It might be sped down or something. Who knows? Just another one of the Zeppelin mysteries out there.
That's right.
Going to side two, or the fifth song, Dancing Days. Now, this is a nice change from the crunch, and it's a happy song. It's not like heavy. Yeah. It's like Led Zeppelin are happy. You know, that's not usual for them. They usually have to be brooding over something, you know, but this is one that, and it's a great way to start off the second side of the record with Page kind of sliding around like he does. I don't know. I never loved this. I always liked it okay. I never loved it as a kid. I think I like it better now. How about you guys?
Well, when I first heard it, I couldn't believe that Led Zeppelin had covered Stone Temple Pilots.
You are young,
Those very young man experiences where I had heard STP's, you know, cover of this 1,000 times because I was a big STP fan. Before I ever realized that it was a Zeppelin cover, and you know, obviously the first time it came on, I was like, "Ah, that's where that came from." Because it really is very, you know, it's not just the lyrics are pulled; it's a kind of a direct lift with fuzz pedals and all that. But yeah, I really like this track, and I like that it's a happy Zeppelin song. I mean, before all the tragedy starts to hit the band in a big way, that kind of changes their, you know, lyric writing, which I think like is a big reason that, you know, the band never really survived or got back together after all that, you know, after, you know, you lose a child and with the experience that comes along with that. And he's like, how can I just go back on stage and like sing about, you know, fucking groupies? it's hard to like live in that world. But I mean, this song is not about that, but I like that they're happy, and it's an upbeat song about the positivity of life and living in the moment and appreciating what you have and appreciating the good times when the bad times pass and all that. And Dancing Days are here again, you know, meaning that there were good times before and there are good times again. I really like this track. It's a good one. It's a good one as you're coming off of Over the Hills and Far Away, and as you skip the crunch, it's a good way to come back in.
So true, so true.
Hey guys, this is Ryan Condal, the executive producer, writer, creator of House of the Dragon, and you're listening to the Ugly American Werewolf in London podcast. And you should download and subscribe. Keep doing that.
On this one, as much as I love everybody else in the band, it really is Jimmy Page to me. So to hear that signature riff right off the bat, it's different. It sounds like, he's sliding around almost like he's melting the notes together. And I really like the kind of the sentiment growing up where it was cold for a good part of the year. The whole about dancing days are here again as the summer evenings grow. Like you kind of think, oh, man, I can't wait for it to be summer. That's the best. So, to your point, Ryan, hearkening back to, you know, a time before and it will come again. That's why I always like this one. And the main riff is really great to me.
Yeah. It's funny. I guess I appreciate that lyric now more living in in England, because that's where these guys grind, okay. particularly in the north. And let me tell you, when after you, you know, November falls and the sun starts setting at like 3:45 in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and it's just cold and gray for 4 months straight, you really do start to appreciate the dancing days and the long summer. Because the other side of that is, you know, summer, the summer sun is up, you know, until 10:30 at night, and then, you know, rises mm-hmm. again at 4:30, quarter to five in the morning, which yeah, brings different right. problems, but at least they're happier problems. They're sunny, they're vitamin D based problems. And right. I did appreciate that song a lot more, as I did, it's not on the album, but as I did Going to California, because that's, I lived there for 15 years and I've always loved that song. Cause you know, the idea of the British going to California and the kind of, you know, the hope and the sun and everything that, you know, mm-hmm. that came along with that. And I'm very nostalgic for that song now, cause I deeply miss California after having lived here. But I guess Dancing Days is sort of the other side of that. It's like the experience of, you really grow to appreciate summer here living in England. Let me tell mm-hmm. you.
Absolutely. That's for sure. It's absolutely true. Yeah. And I'm going to move to the Midwest where it's like, I remember, Ryan, like if it was 90 or more in England for like 3 or 4 days, it's like, oh my God, we're melting. Old people are going to die. And I'm like, it's yeah. 90 every day from May through September where I'm going. Like every single day.
Yeah. But because that's a modern place in a first world country, you have air conditioning right. to yeah. run to shelter. You don't pretend that this has never happened before, which is my favorite feature of the now coming up on my third English summer. Oh, it's never like this, guys. It's been like this every year I've been here. Get some air conditioning.
I know. Well, and you look at the show is going to continue to be a hit, buddy. So you better get used to living there for a while. They're not going to shut down and say, oh yeah, why don't you, you know, make it in Vancouver or something. No, you're going to yeah. keep making it in England. I have no doubt. Yeah. And in Spain and some of the other cool places you get to go.
Yeah. Spain also has air conditioning.
Yes, they do. You know, I was just there and it's a wonderful place. All right. Now, second song on the second side, or sixth song. Jamaica, as it's known to the British, Dire Maker, as it's known to yeah. Americans, it's a reggae song.
Yeah.
That's out of their comfort zone. That's not something that they did before. And I got to tell you, if my memory serves me from high school, this is one the ladies love.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, and it's all those different things, but this one actually fits into the puzzle in mm-hmm. a way, right?
More than the crunch, just, yeah.
And it, more, yeah, and I think it's funny because when I think I first saw the song title, I just thought this was another one of their weird Welsh, Gaelic, Celtic sort of right. song titles. And I didn't, yeah. I didn't realize that it was like a slang, you know, sort of joke. Slang inside yeah. joke. Yeah. So but in my head canon, I'm going to keep this one as one of their weird, you know, one of their weird Welsh titles. But I like this one. I'm going to say I do. Yeah. I like this track and I do not skip this track.
No, never.
Yeah, I mean this showcases bottom right off the bat, just beating the living crap out of these drums, and it's different. And I know people, oh, you know, this is not a reggae song. I don't think it was ever supposed to be a reggae song. I think it was just they love that style of music. Let's fool around and see what we can come up with. Yeah, it's great. It's a great party song. The title is one that you can argue about forever. I did hear Plant say something about how, yes, like you said, Americans that I really like Dire Maker. Hey, that sounds like me. Stop that. Making fun of all the way we talk over here. So, yeah, and you could argue about it, you know, when you were in school, you knew it, you didn't know it. Yeah, I like it. It fits into the song, especially for what's coming next. And even, you know, kind of the piano on the way out, they're just throwing stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
I'm with you in that for Bonzo is great on here. Bonzo makes this mm-hmm. song. It's to yes. me, it's his song. Because Jimmy's, when he's doing the kind of riff bit, I love that part. Yeah. I think it's cool. When he's doing the other stuff in the middle, sometimes it's a little off to me. It's a great song. I love it. It doesn't have a super flashy solo, but it fits the song perfectly. It's very good Led Zeppelin to me. And I guess it was a bit of a hit. They didn't really do singles over here in the UK, or not always in Europe, Ryan, but you know, got the top 20 in the US. Americans did like it. Wow. But you know, I mean, yeah.
Was it the second single on the album?
Yeah, it was
the single.
The first one was Over the Hills, Far Away, Back with Dancing Days. That's May. And in September, it was Jamaica with The Crunch, because if ever there was a B-side on this record, it's The Crunch, right? So, yeah. So no, it did fine in America, but Robert's like, it's the old joke, isn't it? Oh, the wife went on holiday. Jamaica? No, she went on her own accord, you know, kind of thing. So we didn't get that in America, because it says Dyer Maker. Do I like that? Yeah, it's a fun one, you know? So, no, it's a good one. It makes the album, again, give them credit for doing something a little different, because Clapton didn't release I Shot the Sheriff till the next year. So, you know, you didn't see these big British bands dabbling in anything like this previous to this. So, again, they're kind of breaking some ground. But to the epic, to the seventh song, third on the second side, No Quarter.
Yeah.
This is my favorite Led Zeppelin song of all time, at least right now. I mean, it hasn't always been. I do have mad love for Achilles' Last Stand with you, Ryan. I'm down on that for sure. I love when the levee breaks. But I don't know. It's just something like, especially if it's like at the end of the day, I'm going to listen to some tunes. If you get me one Led Zeppelin song, this is it. And I can listen to the Celebration Day version, you know, like, and it's, to me, it's otherworldly. It's amazing. It's all four of them being so good. JPJ deserves a lot of credit on this one, because this is one that he had during the Zeppelin IV sessions. Couldn't finish it. And then he reworked it thanks to his home studio and brought it back to the guys. Like, now it's ready, boys. And it is. It's awesome.
Yeah, this is an epic, epic song. And so, Mac, I have to ask you, Have you heard the Tool cover?
I have not heard the Tool cover, no.
That's a worthwhile journey for you. This was actually, I knew No Quarter as a Tool song before this, but I knew, because I knew it was a Led Zeppelin cover. So okay. You know, going into it, because it was on this sort of non-album EP thing that they did between releases called Salival. And because they were like the last band to join streaming forever, the only way to listen to this was if you illegally, you know, Napstered it, or if you track down this, like, now
the actual EP,
$80 to $90 CD.
Gotcha.
Which of course I did at some point, and was totally happy to spend the money. But I agree with you. I think this is my favorite song on the album now. I don't think it hits favorite Tool song, but I just love it. And I think this is the best lyric writing on it. It's like an epic. Close the door and put out the light. You know, they won't be home tonight. The snow falls hard. And don't you know, the winds of Thor are blowing cold. So you don't get, they're wearing steel that's bright and true. They carry news that must get through. Talk about the campaign, you know, the theme of this album being on the road and it being a war. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, of course, No Quarter is a kind of
military term. Yeah.
Battle term that we use quite a bit in my job.
That's right.
Give them no quarter, which means, you know, fight without mercy. You know, don't, you know, do not take any, you know, no yields.
Prisoners.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the only thing this is missing, the song, is a good Tolkien reference. It's set up right there to bring in some reference to Caradhras or something with the winds. But they go Thor, and I respect that. It's Norse and Nordic, so I'll take that instead. But no, I just, everything about this song, you know, the epic melancholy of it, and coming off of Dancing Days. This is not grim, but I would say heavy. You
heavy
know, in the sense of not like musically heavy, but sort of spiritually heavy. Just a great freaking, you know, experience, the song.
And thick. It's not heavy like Black Sabbath heavy, but it just feels thick. And it's almost like you can feel the wind and the fog kind of rolling in when this gets played, you know. And they loved it. I don't think that they played a show, at least not a full show, without playing this the rest of their days, and they definitely played at Celebration Day. And Page and Plant broke it out when we saw them with the orchestra, Jackson, in the mid '90s. There, you know. So I didn't realize that Jimmy slowed the whole track down, like all the playing from JPJ, all that. He slowed it down to make it thicker, to give it more weight. And then he highly compressed his own guitar so that it wouldn't sound like anything else in the catalog. I had no idea about any of that. All I know is that it stands out easily in their catalog. And it's obviously a bit of a change of pace on a record, especially after, you know, a happy holiday song, if you will, with Jamaica. Then you get to this ominous, brooding thing about, you know, offering no mercy. And I think that JPJ pushed them in more proggy directions, away from just the AAB blues. I think this was a huge step in that direction. And like I said early on one of our like very early shows, Ryan, like number 9 or 10 or 11, we did In Through the Outdoor, because I know it's not that popular in the Zeppelin catalog, but for me, that's incredibly listenable. I can listen to that back and forth really easily. And it just kind of showed where Zeppelin could have gone if JPJ had asserted himself more, or if they had said, we're going to make a record a year no matter what. And so we're going to have to take turns leading this stuff. That's the direction he could have taken them, in my opinion.
So for me on this one, it's, what are we doing here? If I'm driving in the car, this gets skipped. It's just, it's too much. But if you're lying in bed trying to go to sleep, oh, it's freak out time. Oh, my goodness. And you just sit there and you, because you really want to listen to everything that's going on and you want it to kind of be quiet. And then you can really get into, you know, it, I just put on, my first note is, it's time to freak out. And you just have that, like, that really heavy riff. You've got like, what is he saying? Like, you've got to listen to this a couple of times before you start to pick out the lyrics, and the voice is very distorted. And then some, you don't know, maybe sometimes you listen to it and you're thinking, wait, are the vocals messed up or am I out of my mind? What's going on here? What's happening? And it's otherworldly, and it fits in with 7 and 8, 7 and 9. But it's definitely a different, it's a very hard change of pace.
Well, you call it a freak out song. It can also be a make out song in high school, Jackson, right? Because you play, you put on the second side, you get Dancing Days, and they're happy. They're hopping around. You put on Jamaica. Okay, it slows down a little bit, but it's still happy. They groove a little bit. Then it's like, no quarter. All right, why don't you just come sit down next to me? And then you've got 7 minutes. You've got 7 minutes to make a move or to work your magic, boys. You know, and there's a reason Mike DeMone in Fast Times at Ridgemont High suggested, when it comes time to make out, put on, you know, I think he put side two of Led Zeppelin 4, but you could have put this track on after some happy ones. I'm telling you, the magic can happen for you out there, gentlemen.
Isn't this great?
That's the place to be. All right. And then we wrap it up with The Ocean. Boy, that riff is iconic, isn't it? That ocean riff, just and the straight ahead drumming of Bonham. It's you know, a lot of times you get to the end of a record, and we talk about this on our show a lot, it's a throwaway track. It's like, okay, they said we had to have 10 tracks, so here's the 10th track.
Yeah, it peters out, right? Yeah.
Yes, this is not a peter out. This is not a throwaway. This is a good one. Although, it's different.
It is, but it's the album's rocker. I mean, I was going through my first pass, I was like, the only thing this is, other than Tolkien lyrics, the only thing this album is really missing is its rocker. It's like, it's, you know, it's Immigrant Song. It's, you know, it's Good Times, Bad Times, but it ends with it. I mean, I forgot that, you know, because you expect, you know, The Ocean would be, you know, at the front of the at the album typically, with the way they put things together. And but what a great closing and a way to like kind of flip the script in a way. I love that song, and it's why I always listen to this album to the end, because you have such great stuff at the end of it.
Good point.
So you're coming out of No Quarter, right? And it's just kind of like it
yeah, zipping up ends. Your pants,
right? Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever. And then then the beginning of this one is, you know, we've done 4 already, but now we're steady. And then they went 1, 2, 3. And so I would turn that up so I could hear the hissing on the tape to hear him say that. And then bam, right into the song, as loud as it could go. This is awesome. And it's just, I mean, it's iconic. They could have started the record with this, but the fact that it's the end makes this one of my favorite records of all time, just because you've got the heavy hitter at the end of the thing.
We've done 4 already, but now we're steady, and then they win. 1, 2, 3, 4.
And if Paige is jamming on that at the end, it's a big send off at the end, and they kind of do the doo wop as a throwback to those guys.
That makes no sense to the rest of the song, but it fits in perfectly.
It does, you know, and it wraps up an album where they took some chances. They took some chances with Crunch. They took some chances with Jamaica. No Quarter is not something that, you know, you're going to play next to with a Jackson 5 song on the radio. You know, it's awesome, but it's not exactly pop music necessarily, you know. So it's rare that you ever find a dud on a Zeppelin record. And I know the Crunch isn't our favorite, but I mean, there's no real duds on here. The Crunch is different, but it's not bad to me. And the way you wrap it up with this, and the fact that House of the Holy, the song, which I love on Physical Graffiti, wasn't ready or didn't make the cut. Also, The Rover, Black Country Woman, those were kind of in various stages while they were doing this. Even Walter's Walk, which ends up on Coda, was done during this time, you know. I mean, it just shocking when, like, Coda was basically an obligatory thing. It's like, okay, we still owe them a record. We want to do something to wrap up our legacy here. So they just took everything that existed, basically, and popped it together. And some of it was as far back as 1972, 73, like Walter's Walk. But as far as one statement goes, this is very powerful, especially on the heels of Zeppelin IV, which is a juggernaut. I mean, sold 25 million, 30, 50, I don't know how many millions of copies it sold. But this is diamond. This has sold 11 million in the United States on its own. And you look up the bands who've sold diamond records back to back. The list is very, very short, especially if you just go to rock and roll. It's like Led Zeppelin, the Beatles, the Eagles, Def Leppard did it, and maybe that's Pink Floyd. And then that's it. Any parting thoughts from you boys on this one?
What it means
to you in your life?
I love this album. I wanted to talk about the cover art too, because you touched on it a little bit, but apparently it was based on the Arthur C. Clarke story, Childhood's End, or at least inspired by, which is a story of an alien invasion where the invasion is benevolent and they actually come to save us from our own writing, our own destruction. And if you think of the album that way, I think it sort of, pulls everything together. And, the ocean, I can't help but be influenced a bit by Tool, you know, whereas if you think of the ocean as this like vast horizon and expanse, to me, I see the ocean as a warning, the warning of anima and the seas rising and the meteor hitting and washing everything away. I don't know if you think of Childhood's End and then ending with song remains the same and then ending with the ocean. There's somewhat of a kind of an apocalyptic undertone to me to this album. I just love it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's done by Hypnosis, which is primarily Storm Thorgerson and Aubrey Powell, who had done incredible artwork and covers over the year, probably most closely associated with Pink Floyd over the years. But, you know, they obviously worked with Led Zeppelin. They did some good work with Yes between when Roger Dean wasn't doing all their covers. Sabbath worked with them, UFO, ELO. I think Paul McCartney and Alan Parsons, you know, they've just done some great stuff. Although I admit when I first got it, I was a little off put by it because it's Naked Kids. You know, and I'm like, as a 14, 15 year old, I'm not supposed to be looking at Naked Kids, you know, anywhere. Like, I'm not into that. That's not my thing. And I guess they went to the Giant's Causeway in Ireland, where these natural hexagon rock formations kind of form next to the sea. It's a pretty amazing thing. And they worked on it for days. But it was always the orange tint to it that I thought was kind of cool. Because the first album was, obviously, it's the Hindenburg. The second one was kind of an odd sepia tone thing. The third had the cool wheel on it. It had all sorts of little odds and ends in it. The fourth one, although iconic, is a bit odd, right? It's a picture of the dude with the sticks on his back. And then if you open it up, well, that's in a torn down building. But this is a more otherworldly kind of thing. And and for that, I do like it.
It's an interesting cover, though. I like the story of the first idea that was brought to the band, which was I believe, a tennis court with a racket on it. And what do you – oh, you mean our stuff is a racket? Get out of my face. Get out of here. I can only imagine the PR blitz that had to accompany that with phone calls and everything. It's a joke. We're sorry. Here's something else. The fact that you would have the Stones to show up there with a joke deal, like, baffles me why you would do that.
So was it Storm's idea to do that? And they're like, okay, that's it. You're fired. Bring Aubrey in here. We'll let him do it.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. And I don't know, like, did he mean it as a joke? Like, how was he really serious? But apparently Paige took one look at that and the top of his head came off and he was like, get out of here. Don't ever talk to me again.
I would love to see Peter Grant eject somebody from a meeting. That would be, even if it was me, I would love to do. I would love to go
like
back
physically.
Yes, and have him pick
but like
me
physically
up and
eject
throw.
You. Yes.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And then I could tell that story. I could dine out on that the rest of my life.
Unfortunately, the meeting was on the Starship. So,
So 30,000 feet later,
pushed out by Peter Grant.
Yeah.
If he pushed out a parachute, it'd still be a great story. Yeah. But yeah, that's awesome. Well, Ryan, look, man, we really thank you for coming on and realize that this is, you know, a busy time for you as you work on your Golden Globe award-winning show for season two. When do the Emmys come out? I don't even know.
The nominations I think are in June, and then the ceremonies in September. So
oh, okay.
Still quite a ways to go.
Long time to go there. Okay. So yeah, you might have seen. So, and then when do we think season two will be hitting HBO? The first show? Is that
fall? At some point in the future. I mean, I of course know things, but I can't,
TBD.
I can't say them. We'll start shooting in the next couple of months, and then, you know, it's a long production and then post period, so I think people can probably back into a reasonable release time frame knowing what it takes to make the show.
Very good. Well, listen, congratulations on all your success.
Thank
there
you.
and all the best in the future, and stay in touch, you know, and maybe in 2024, you know, you could teach us about Tool. I gotta tell you, grunge was not our thing. And so after that, I kind of went back into the, I'm just going to get in the Stones of the 70s. I'm going to learn about Rainbow, you know, after Blackmore left Deep Purple. You know, I kind of went that way. And then everybody else in our generation kind of got into that post-grunge, into the Tools, into the Deftones, into stuff like that. So maybe you come on and educate us a little bit on that stuff.
Yeah, I would love to. I'm going to start by sending you, I feel like a good entry point is their cover Note a Quarter, which is awesome. So I'm going to send you a link to that so you can check it out and
awesome.
And freak out to it.
Nice. Nice. And if you need to find rare records in England, go to rarevinyl.com.
Oh, really?
And they sponsor our show. And so just use the code podcast and you get 10% off. And they have a quarter of a million things in stock. I went down to their place and it's amazing the care they take with all that stuff. But it's also like the end of Raiders, where it's like, you know, there's all these boxes of things. Like, God, someone's got to go through all
this. Oh, that's
stuff,
awesome.
You know?
I've got to make the pilgrimage, but I will check that out. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
bud. Bye.
Well, it's cool to see Ryan back on the show. And yeah, I mean, between being on our show the second time and winning the Golden Globe for Best Drama, I mean, this is a pretty big month for him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I'm sure that's the other thing too. Oh, when's the next season coming? Okay, just relax. We're working on it. Relax. You know, I could tell you, but I have to kill you. So it's fine. We can patiently wait around for the second season. It'll be here. And if not, just watch the first season.
Exactly. You know, or go watch all the Game of Thrones, which I still haven't done. I'm one of the rare people who did not watch Game of Thrones. And although I'm familiar with the genre and what's happened and some of the characters, I watched House of the Dragon without having all that baggage, because it does take, it's a prequel. It takes place 172 years, at least it starts 172 years before all that. So
I don't think you really, I mean, it would definitely have helped, but it's not like
necessary.
If you didn't see Game of Thrones, yeah, you wouldn't be like, I don't even understand. The other thing too, that was pointed out to me was there's no one from Game of Thrones in House of the Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have that thing where it's like, well, I know this guy's going to make it because I've seen this person later.
Right.
There's none of that. You don't know what's going to happen with any of the characters. So that was always the thing to me in those Star Wars prequels. Like, well,
right.
you know
you're going to live.
Gonna
I know you're
going to so.
Die. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Like, correct. Watching Rogue One. Is she going to make it, Daddy? I'm like, well, she wasn't in Star Wars, so I doubt she makes it.
You've never seen this person before. So, or, you know he's going to be Darth Vader. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. But no, that's really cool. I'm really happy for him and all his success, you know. And it's always cool when you find someone who is creative, who does like share some of the same stuff that we like. Like, we love Led Zeppelin. We love rock music. Well, he does too. And obviously being a little bit younger, he got into some bands that we didn't. So having him on to talk about Tool or whomever it may be.
Tool is a weird deal. You've got people that can't stand them, and you've got people that think everything they've done is genius level. So I would be interested to talk to him about that and maybe learn a little bit more about the band, because I'm in the camp of I don't think that they're terrible. I just never really got into them.
Right.
So I would like to kind of get a guide through there. You know, here's where you start. Listen to this. You'll like this part.
Yeah, and you know how I am. If I don't know it, I automatically don't like it, you know, which is dumb. But it's the way I am. It's like, I already know all I need to know. But, you know, you think about it, you go back in time. I didn't know anything about heavy metal. No, I don't like heavy metal. Do you like Iron Maiden? No. Well, listen to this. Oh, man, that's really good. Yeah. Why don't you listen more? Yeah, I think I will, you know. Or when we were in college, Oasis, those jerks from England. You guys think they're so great. No, I'm not listening to them. Then years later, yeah, that's my favorite band. They're amazing. You know, they're so good. So I need to be more open-minded. And so getting someone like Ryan to help me there might not be the worst idea.
Yeah, interesting to see what the second season holds. It's interesting. It's always interesting to get to hear somebody talk about music that they're passionate about that you're maybe not. Mm-hmm. And so to kind of, like you said, it's like a gateway to get in there. It's kind of like, you know, food you've never had before. Like, I don't think I like, well, just try it.
Right.
Oh, hey, I think I do like this. So yeah, interesting. And always kind of go in with an open mind.
Yeah. You know, and honestly, we've done In Through the Outdoor, we've done Zeppelin 4. And if you just said, what would your next one be? I never would have said Houses of the Holy. I would have picked something else almost immediately. But because he had passion for it, and you know, he played it at his wedding and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, come on, let's talk about that one.
Yeah, it's a great record. I think it kind of gets lost in the Zeppelin catalog only because it's sandwiched between 4 and Physical Graffiti. I think it's not as hard-hitting as the first couple of records, so if you listen to it, you'll like it, especially if you're a Zeppelin fan, but I do think it gets skipped too many times or glossed over in the talk about the Zeppelin catalog.
And I agree with you there, and it's also kind of just a point in time in that, if I'm not mistaken, Zeppelin 1 through 4 were all made by 1971. Yes?
Yes.
Four didn't come in. 4 was out in November, I think it was, of 71. And then Physical Graffiti didn't come out till what, 76? Maybe 75?
So, yeah, something like that.
So this was the only one made in 73. This is the only one that came out. So it felt like a long time probably between Zeppelin 4 and Physical Graffiti. And it's also kind of immortalized because of the song Remains the Same movie, which I believe also came out in 76, at least 75, but maybe 76. So you got that soundtrack. And obviously, that was the new album. That's the album they were touring on at the time. So although some might feel they look dated, because when it came out, that was kind of like the summer of punk. And here's Jimmy in his dragon outfit or whatever. And they look
stumbling around.
He looks very 1973. And of course, they're in Madison Square Garden. They're not in some sweaty little hole with kids with spitting on each other and, you know, ramming their heads into each other. So all of a sudden the culture had changed. But to me, that movie, The Song Remains the Same, is iconic. It captures them at the height of their powers, both musically and as far as just being a draw. You'd say, well, they're a bigger draw in the late 70s, maybe because they could do stadiums. But then they were a little more erratic, right? You didn't always know what kind of show you were going to get. But they were still fairly professional at that point and killing it on stage. And, you know, maybe Dazed and Confused was 25 minutes, not like 45 minutes. Like, well, we don't know how to end it, you know. Kind of, what do we do, you know? And look, they branched out. The songs on here are different than anything that came before it. And in some ways, they're different than what came after it. So this one has a special place in the catalog, and it's one that I kind of forgot for a long time because I didn't like Crunch. Dancing Days was too happy for me. The Song Remains the Same wasn't Stairway to Heaven, and you know, and I can just listen to No Quarter on something else. So I have a better appreciation of this now, having done the research and for the show.
Well, good, because this was the first Zeppelin record that I ever bought, and so with that in mind, I was going to listen to the hell out of this thing. And like you, Physical Graffiti was just, it was too big of a commitment at that point in time, monetarily, to get into. So yeah, it always holds a special place in my heart. And It's not as heavy. And I think maybe when it came out, people were, what is this? You know, what direction are you going in? It's just the evolution. You can really hear the fact that they're layering a lot more stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a varied sound. It's just, guys, we want to do something different. You could make Led Zeppelin 1 over and over and over again, but I'm glad they didn't.
Well, that wraps up episode number 116 on Houses of the Holy with our friend Ryan Condal of House of the Dragon, the co-creator, executive producer, head writer, and all-around great guy with a huge hit TV show on his hand. We wish him all the luck in the world on that show. And we appreciate him coming on to talk about Houses of the Holy. It's one that I'll admit I was into when I was younger, but it kind of became the one I didn't overlook, but just figured, I've heard that one. I want to go back to something I really love, like Physical Graffiti, like In Through the Outdoor, or even like Led Zeppelin 4, which we did that show over a year ago on the 50th anniversary on Led Zeppelin 4. And admitted we don't listen to it that much just because we know it's overplayed. We know the songs really well. And I guess you could kind of say the same for Houses of the Holy here. A great album. No Quarter Alone puts it in the stratosphere, but just think about it from beginning to end, with Song Remains the Same all the way through to The Ocean. The kind of off-kilter or genre-bending tunes like The Crunch, like Jammaker, it really just shows how powerful and talented Led Zeppelin were. They could try these different things. And they might not always be your favorites, might not all become live staples, but some of them sure did. Especially when you talk about The Song Remains the Same and No Quarter. Big, big songs in their catalog. And with boys starting to stretch themselves a little bit there. So thanks to Ryan Condal. And if you want to learn more about Ryan, his Stuff That Dreams Are Made Of is a great podcast. I think it's at Props Podcast on Twitter. And if you've got the HBO, not only can you watch House of the Dragon, but you can watch the House of the Dragon Built, the behind-the-scenes TED episode thing, and Ryan's featured there quite a lot, not only to learn a little bit about him and hear from him, but to learn how they magically created this incredible world and all the hard work, people who dedicated themselves to it. It's really something to behold, and he deserves all the credit in the world and all the fine people who worked on that one. So, as usual, folks, we want to know, do we get something right? Do we get something wrong? Do we miss the point? Do we leave out your favorite part? You have got to let us know. You email us. UglyAmericanWerewolf@gmail.com, or you could tweet or DM us at @ugly_werewolf or at @ActionCheck72. We're on Instagram, we're on YouTube. You let us know about the bands, the albums, the concerts, the rock properties that you want to hear us talk about. And we thank you for downloading and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be Apple, Spotify, Good Pods is good to us. Anywhere you like to get them, Podbean's been big. Please continue to download and subscribe. And if you're thinking about it, hey, give us a positive review. It just helps us find more rock fans like you, helps us grow the show. And as usual, we want to thank Pantheon Podcast, of which we are a proud member, and to our amazing sponsor, RareVinyl.com. And you go to RareVinyl.com, use the code PODCAST, and you can save 10% off of your orders. And thanks so much to Ryan Condal. Can't even tell you what we're doing next week, folks. You're just going to have to tune in and find out. But to all of you rockers all around the world, be cool and stay safe.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com. Code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.